America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the No Boring Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. As it has been for 3 years, more or less now, every Friday at noon Eastern Time, the first hour of our program, we essentially turn the show over for that first hour to Bernie Sanders, who was the congressman from Vermont, now is the senator from Vermont. And Bernie then will be taking your calls after he and I have a brief conversation. Our telephone number, 866-303-2270, a new phone number we have, 866-303-2270. And, of course, you can drop by airamericaradio.com for our blog, or if you want to drop into our live chat room, tomhartman.com, there's a link to it. But Bernie Sanders, neither a Republican nor a Democrat, the independent from Vermont, I think of him as America's senator. It's just, I'm so pleased always to have our Brunch with Bernie segment here, our first hour. Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you, Senator. Iraq, Iran, a lot going on in the world.
A lot is going on in Congress. Congress is now on break for the President's week vacation. But let me touch on some of the hot issues that are obviously being debated. In Iraq, I think what you're seeing among more progressive Democrats is an understanding that a non-binding resolution against the war, against the surge, is not good enough. You're going to see a movement, I think, toward demanding that the president get reauthorization for the war, because clearly, no matter what one thinks about the war, the task in front of us, the goal of what wants to be accomplished, is very, very different from when Bush misled us into the war in the first place. So you're going to see a lot of discussion on that. You're also going to be seeing some heavy thinking about how we can, in fact, bring our troops home as soon as possible by using the budgetary authority of the Congress. So those are two areas that listeners should be paying attention to. In terms of Iran, there is a concern that a lot of the rhetoric we're hearing about Iran sounds very similar to what we heard 4 or 5 years ago with regard to Iraq. Peter DeFazio in the House and I in the Senate have introduced language which makes it very, very clear that if the president wants to go to war with Iran, and I certainly hope that he does not, that he's going to have to come to the Congress for authority to do that. And other people are working on that issue in different ways. The situation in Iraq clearly is a disaster. It's frightening. Nobody has any good solutions, but I think there is a growing feeling among the American people and the members of Congress that the best solution is to get our troops out of harm's way as soon as possible, to perhaps leave some of the troops deployed in other Mideast countries if emergencies arise, to be able to respond quickly. But we want to bring our troops home as soon as we possibly can. So you're going to see, I think, increased debate on that issue between those of us who feel that way and the president and his supporters who want to basically increase troops at the same time, interestingly, as the British are beginning the process.
Now, Bernie, you were talking about the more progressive members of the House and Senate. You're the founder of the Progressive Caucus in the House of Representatives.
I am. I founded the Progressive Caucus in 1991. It's now being chaired in the House by Lynn Woolsey and Barbara Lee of California.
Yeah, and it's grown continuously since then, and it's really a force to be reckoned with. And yet, there still is a very conservative element, even within the Democratic Party. And so I'm wondering. You said, you know, there's this growing momentum among the progressives in the House and Senate to use the budget authority to prevent the Bush from expanding the war, to prevent him from going into Iraq, things like this. In the real world, though, I mean, you know, with everybody else in the House and Senate, do you think that this has the possibility of actually getting traction?
Well, it's a tough fight because you're going to have most, not all, Republicans against this. You're going to have conservative Democrats against this. On the other hand, you have people like John Mercer and Carl Levin chairing important committees. You have people like John Warner, the former Republican chair of the Armed Forces Committee, now at least in opposition to the surge. And I think most importantly, Tom, you have among the American people a feeling that this war is increasingly a disaster and we need very new policies. And, you know, politicians listen to polls.
Yeah.
So I'm not suggesting for a moment that this is going to be an easy fight. But I think the momentum is with us.
Yeah, it's certainly, if my callers are any indication of it, that's definitely the case.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, and people from all political persuasions are just, I mean, the fatalities are going up. What's happening in Iraq is such a tragedy, And what is, this president has what he has done, some are calling one of the worst foreign policy blunders in American history, and I suspect that that's true, because the damage as to what he has done already is going to take years and years at best to clean up. I mean, he has turned much of the world against us, has isolated our country, has lowered the esteem that people all over the world used to have for the United States. So it's going to take an enormous amount of work. But I would hope that more and more of my colleagues understand that they're going to have to use their authority now to move this country in a very different direction.
Indeed. Global warming is also on the calendar.
What's going on with global warming is, once again, you have a president which, I have said many, many times will go down in history as I believe, one of the worst presidents in American history. And here's a guy who has almost denied the existence, along with his administration, of the reality of global warming, has appointed anti-environmental polluters to head major environmental agencies. But I think, as you know, the recent UN report, which involved thousands of scientists from well over 100 countries, has conclusively stated that A, global warming is in fact real, B, it is almost definitely man-made, and C, if we don't get a handle on it, it could cause terrible damage to our planet in so many ways. And now what you're seeing, as opposed to what existed in the old Congress, where you had a chairman of the Environmental Committee who believed that global warming was, quote-unquote, a hoax, you have Barbara Boxer chairing the Environmental Committee, and I work with Barbara. We have introduced very strong legislation which would lower greenhouse gas emissions to 1990 levels by 2020 and 80% lower than that by 2050. I think you are going to see a very, very strong effort on the part of Congress now to move this country very strongly toward energy efficiency, raise CAFE standards for automobiles, develop standards for housing and building construction, and also exploit the new technologies that are sitting there really waiting to take off in terms of solar, wind, geothermal, hydrogen, biofuels, water, and so forth and so on. And what I believe very strongly, and we're working on this right now for Vermont and for America, is that we can create many, 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 some estimate millions of good-paying jobs as part of the Green Revolution. So there will be many pieces of legislation, and I think you're going to see the passage of a number of pieces of legislation. We will see what Bush will do when these bills get to his desk, given the fact that he's a strong defender of the oil industry and so forth. But I think most Americans know we don't have many choices now. We're going to have to move very, very aggressively to protect this planet, both in energy efficiency and sustainable energy. There's another issue out there, Tom, that I hope people will be paying attention to. That is the budget, and that process is now moving along pretty quickly, and I'm on the budget committee. And the issue here is, once again, Bush has presented a disastrous budget which cuts back on Medicare, cuts back on Medicaid, cuts back on education, certainly does not give the kind of financial support to our veterans who need that, and it's basically an awful budget. The challenge that we have in Congress now is if we are going to adequately fund education, if we're going to adequately fund health care, if we're going to adequately fund the needs of our seniors and so forth and so on, nutrition programs, we are going to have to summon up the courage to rescind the tax breaks that Bush has given to the very, very wealthiest people. In Bush's budget is the total repeal of the estate tax, which to my mind is just almost beyond comprehension because, among other things, while Bush is cutting back on Medicaid and Medicare and veterans' needs and so forth, he would be giving, by doing that, a $32 billion, with a D, billion-dollar tax break to the Walton family that owns Walmart. So you have a multi-billion-dollar family right now who then avoid paying the estate tax, which would drive up the deficit, which means that we don't fund special education, we won't fund environmental protection, we don't fund the needs of the middle class and working families. So I will be working very hard to try to get the Democratic leadership to stand up and start rescinding some of these tax breaks.
Good on you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders with us on the line. He will be taking your calls next and responding to your thoughts, concerns, queries, comments, whatever it may be. 16 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program on Air America Radio.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment every Friday, noon to 3 Eastern. Noon to 1 Eastern with Bernie, the program noon to 3 Eastern. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, taking your calls. Jim in Los Angeles, California. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, Bernie, I'd like to ask you why the appropriations can't separate the contractor funds from the military funds. Besides, then you could cut off the contractors. I don't see how you're going to get the soldiers out before you get the contractors out anyway.
Well, Tim, you raise a good question. And what I could tell you is that there is now, for the first time, you know, Bush has been in office for 6 years. He's had a Republican House, a Republican Senate. What you are definitely going to see is a very, very hard look at the fraud, the mismanagement that is going on in Iraq, the fact that often our troops don't have the equipment they need, the other necessities they need, while Halliburton and friends are making billions and billions of dollars. So you are going to see investigations on that.
Jerry in Long Island, New York, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, thanks very much for taking my call. Yeah, I have two questions for the Senator. One about the current war in Iraq and its escalation, and one about a possible future war by Bush with Iran and the need to prevent it. And with respect to the war in Iraq, I'd like to know what legislation do you support to de-escalate the war and end it? For instance, do you support Senator Obama's Iraq War De-escalation Act, or do you support what the last caller was talking about, cutting off some of the money like the ones to go to the contractors? And how far can Congress be expected to actually go to vote on and pass into law some kind of legally binding Iraq war-related legislation?
Jerry, these are exactly the issues that we touched upon a few moments ago. I think I'm on all of the legislation, including Obama's, including Kennedy's, including Feingold's. And the legislation that I'm on essentially does two things. Number one, it would require a reauthorization of the war. In other words, the president can't simply say, well, I'm going to expand the war, I'm going to escalate the war, because the purpose now is very, very different than the purpose he gave us when he first began the war. So I'm on all, I think, all of the key pieces of legislation. In terms of Iran, I have introduced legislation which would require the president to gain the support of Congress, go to Congress before he could attack Iran. And I believe that if he were obliged to do that, as my legislation requires, there would not be a war in Iran.
Scott in Arkansas, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders, I understand that you're on the Appropriations
Committee. No, I am not on the Appropriations Committee. No, I'm on the Budget Committee, not the Appropriations Committee.
Okay, well, anyway, I read a report that there are the vast majority of our troops coming back from Iraq come from small towns.
Yes.
And they'll have to travel anywhere from 100 to 200 miles to get to a VA hospital or clinic. And I was wondering if we could attach some kind of legislation that any hospital that receives federal funding should have some kind of program to support veterans when they come back.
Well, Scott, you've touched on a very important issue. I am on the Veterans Committee, not on the Appropriations Committee. And the first point you made is exactly right. What a number of studies have shown is that most of the soldiers in Iraq come from low-income areas and come from rural areas. There are a lot of reasons for that, but often it has to do with economics. Young people don't have a lot of money. People who join the National Guard will often do it for the extra paycheck, educational opportunities. That's point number one, so you're right. Point number two is as a member of the Veterans Committee, I'm going to be doing everything that I can to substantially increase funding for the VA so that not only when the men and women get back from Iraq get the quality of care that they need in the locations where they can access that care, but also that we take care of our older veterans as well. One of the untold stories, I mean, as I'm sure listeners have caught on by now, I'm not a great fan of the Bush administration. And, this administration has been a disaster in almost every area. But one of the untold areas is the disgraceful way that they have treated our veterans. And it's not just the recent story that some people may have heard it reported upon in the Washington Post, and a very good story about what's happening to some of the outpatient veterans at the Walter Reed Hospital. But it is all over this country, and it's not just from this war. It goes back to World War II. There are waiting lists for our veterans.
Thank you.
President wants to increase the cost that they have to pay for prescription drugs and some of them for just access to the system as well. So we are going to work very hard to make sure that the veterans who have served this country get the health care and other benefits they were promised.
Elizabeth in San Diego, we have just about a minute before we have to take a break. Elizabeth.
Hi. From what I understand about the organization of STRATCOM, Strategic Command, and the national policy, NPS 17, all President Bush has to do is contact the commander of STRATCOM, and he has the power to launch a nuclear weapon. And from what I understand, the only thing stopping him is the general disobeying orders. Is that, what do you think?
I'm sorry, Elizabeth, I'm just not familiar with that. There is a process that one goes through, needless to say, before a nuclear attack, and I'm just not exactly sure of all of the details.
Yeah. Okay. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders with us taking your calls. It's by 866-303-2270, our telephone number. It's the Tom Hartman radio program right here on Air America Radio, the real free speech zone. No barbed wire fences. Nobody will be hauled off if they have a No Blood for Oil bumper sticker on their car. Stick around. We'll be right back with Bernie Sanders.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
Welcome back to the place where progressives fiendishly plot for nasty stuff like national health care and good wages, living wages for everybody, and clean air and water, and a national park system that's actually funded, and holy cow, all that awful progressive stuff. It's our Brunch with Bernie. It's the Tom Hartman program, and our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, independent member of the United States Senate. Our number, 866-303-2270. And let's see here. Pardon me. Ryan in Laguna Beach, California. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Tom. And, Senator, I'm so glad to hear you're working on repealing this policy of taxing our children instead of the top
1%. Absolutely right.
That's what it is. Yeah. But my question goes to the fact that our current government really doesn't represent the collective will of the people. Now, you and my Senator Barbara Boxer and a few others are actually the exception to that rule, and you were both recently reelected by large margins. So without discounting the need for an engaged public, my question is there a concerted effort that you know of to get the message out to local party chairs and campaign managers and such that, contrary to popular belief, the Bernie Sanders politician of the people approach to governing and campaigning is actually a proven winning strategy to win elections? Because I want more populists in office, personally.
Brian, that is a very perceptive point, and I happen to agree with you 100%. I think that if you are prepared to take on big money interests, if you're prepared to speak forcefully for working people, for the middle class, not only is it the right thing to do, in fact, it is good politics. Sometimes people say, boy, it takes courage to do what you do. No, it doesn't. It's the right thing to do, and people respond. The problem that you have is that in Washington right now, big money has enormous influence over the political process. And people, Tom just mentioned national health care. Well, it's hard for some members of the Congress to fight for a national health care program if they're taking a lot of money from the drug companies, if they're taking a lot of money from the insurance companies or medical equipment suppliers. So you're absolutely right. And I think more and more people are understanding that there is a growing frustration and anger at a system in which we're seeing a growing gap between the rich and the poor. We're the only nation in the industrialized world that does not have a national health care program. The middle class is shrinking, and the people on top are making out like bandits. So I think, Ryan, that you are going to see more and more people raising fundamental issues and being prepared to take on big money interests that have so much power.
Tim in Saginaw, Michigan, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi there, Tom, Senator Sanders, correction. First off, I'd like to thank you for your continued support to the air traffic controllers. We really helped all your support, and I know you're going to continue to help us. The topic I wanted to bring up actually is another aviation topic, aviation user fees, and what Administrator Blakey spoke to you about this last week, how it's probably going to be an attempt for the FAA to try to privatize the entire system. Is their main goal? And I'm just curious your comments towards that.
Well, I am... been one of the leaders in the Congress, not only in supporting our air traffic controllers, but in opposition to Bush's effort to privatize a whole lot of the federal government. And that deals with literally contractors in Iraq, and we're seeing a lot of privatization of our military, which I think is bad for our country. It is costly. It does not provide the quality of service that we have a right to expect. I was the mayor of Burlington, Vermont for 8 years. So I know a little bit about the discussion of privatization. And the argument always is, my goodness, if you privatize, you could pay workers lower wages, you could cut benefits, you could save taxpayers money. Well, maybe in the short term that will look good. But in the long term, in terms of public service, what you want are people who take their careers seriously, not people who are going to leave the job and create a situation where you have count me in as one of those people who will be very strong in opposition and continue to be in opposition to Bush's privatization efforts.
And not just the FAA, but right across the board.
Certainly, that's across the board. But in the FAA, my God, you certainly don't want the lowest paid guy following our airplanes and making sure they land safely. You want people who are skilled, who take their job seriously, and do it as a career.
Yeah, well said. Ed in Perrysburg, Ohio, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, how you doing, Bernie? I was talking to a defense supplier last week, and he told me about 40% of the Defense Department stuff goes to China at some point. Is there anything that we can do about it, requiring raw materials or the finished product at all U.S. source?
That's a very important question, and the answer is there has been some discussion, not enough, in the Congress about that. I think what the supplier suggested to you is that increasingly we are being our Defense Department, our military is being dependent upon parts and products that come from other countries, which I think makes us very, very vulnerable from a security point of view. And the answer is that some of us who are not only in opposition to our entire trade policy, which is running up record-breaking trade deficits and which is costing us millions of good jobs, are equally concerned about this growing dependence upon other countries, including China, for parts and weaponry.
John in Morrell Bay, California. Am I pronouncing that right, John?
John Baumann?
Morrell Bay?
Yeah, Morrell Bay.
Morrell Bay. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you very much. Senator, I got two quick questions. The Wars Powers Act that this president has, if all the information is based on lies, why can't his war powers be rescinded? And if they can't be rescinded, do the same powers this president have, will they be handed to the next president?
Well, when we talk about forcing, we're trying to get the Congress to reauthorize the war, that's essentially what we're talking about. The president misled us into a war, and what he said 5 years ago was that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, that Iraq was linked to al-Qaeda, and both of those premises turned out to be very, very wrong. Now he wants to escalate the war. And what some of us are saying, if you want to escalate the war, you're coming in right now on a whole different premise. What you're talking about now is a civil war in Iraq. You're talking about Shiites killing Shiites. You're talking about an insurgency and so forth and so on. You're going to have to come to Congress for new authorization to continue and escalate this war. So that's exactly what we are talking about, John.
Janice in Long Beach, California. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Pardon me, did you say Janice?
I did. You're on.
Hi. It's an honor to have my call accepted and an honor to have it accepted when Bernie Sanders is there. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
First of all, at the risk of sounding like a paranoid nut, there are so many of us in daily conversation. It's around. The people are all very aware that with this getting rid of habeas corpus and Posse Comitatus, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, has a coup already occurred? Have the neocons, in effect, basically taken over? I mean, is there any way to stop them at this point?
Well, no, I don't think a coup has taken place. I think that the neocons have been successful over the last 6 years in pushing a very right-wing extremist agenda. My hope and, in fact, my expectation, Janet, is that you will be seeing on committee after committee, especially the Judiciary Committee in both the House and the Senate, a very, very hard look at all of Bush's legislation, like the USA Patriot Act, and actions like his signing statements, which, to my mind at least, are unconstitutional. And I would hope that one by one we go through them, we debate them, and I would hope that Congress makes substantial changes in all of those pieces of legislation, all of the actions on the part of the president, which undermine our basic constitutional rights.
Let's give us back our rights. Ed in Houston, Texas, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, thank you very much, Senator. I really hate to trouble you with this, but I have written to several senators, several newspapers. I was in Ecuador between Christmas and New Year's, and there was a group of five U.S. senators, both Republicans and Democrats. Harry Reid was on the trip in a government airplane, made four trips all over South America with their spouses. In Ecuador, I personally saw them staying at the most expensive spa hotel in Ecuador. And, you know, I think it's really good that they do that because they were down there on a mission that Bush has forgotten to do, how to do to make friends in the world. But I really want to know where the authority and where the financing and how, who authorizes this kind of action by a group of senators?
Well, delegations go out often under the authority of the committee of jurisdiction, or if you're the majority leader, I suspect you can do that as well. Give these guys a little bit of break here, because there are strong security issues. And I know that sometimes people think it's a terrible idea for senators or congressmen to be traveling around the world. I don't. I think especially given the record of the Bush administration, it is important that senators and congressmen meet their counterparts around the world to get a sense of what's going on in these countries, whether it's Latin America or Europe or Africa or wherever, and see how we can improve the situation.
Joe in Seattle, we have just about 15 seconds before we've got to take a break here. You got a quick question?
Yeah.
Maybe Bernie can...
Senator Sanders, I'm a sales rep in the transportation logistics business, and I'd like you to comment on the proposed NAFTA transportation corridor that's going to take away lots of transportation jobs on the West Coast.
Well, I think that's consistent with the failure of NAFTA in general. I voted against NAFTA, and it's part of a trade policy which is failing the middle class and working families of America. So I am strongly opposed to that.
You think it's going to change?
Don't know.
Yeah, okay. We can hope. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. We'll be back with your calls for Bernie right after this break here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
And welcome back to The Pill That Will Help You Escape the Matrix, the Tom Hartman Radio Program on Air America Radio. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. And Bernie, Peter in Burlington, Vermont is on with you. Peter, you're live with Bernie.
Yes, sir. This is a great show. It's a shame. It's pathetic that there isn't more of them on the airwaves. We need them desperately. But anyway, I'm just curious to know why, I mean, just a matter of weeks ago, there was a delegation that went to Iraq, and I think even Hillary Clinton was a part of that. Why is there no delegation going to Iran to speak with Iran?
Well, that's an interesting question. There have been a number of delegations going to Iraq to speak to the leadership there and observe what's going on. In my view, at least, we should certainly begin discussions with Iran and try to work out some kind of agreement dealing with their nuclear activity, but at the same time do everything that we can to end this growing war of words, which is pretty frightening.
Jim in Santa Fe, New Mexico. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, hi. I love having you on, Senator Bernie. I appreciate it and appreciate the show. I think this is the first time I've called. I have two questions, if you have time, but the first one, the main one, was I'm wondering and I'm concerned whether you think the mood in Congress, the courage of Congress, in addition to the American people, is any different than it was the first time we got into the last time we got into a war, Iraq, and suddenly everybody jumped into line, felt they had to be good citizens, be patriotic, not question the Patriot Act and everything else that came along, support the president, and as Dan Rather said, not be accused of being unpatriotic by complaining. So I'm wondering if Bush jumps into Iran.
No. I think the world has changed a whole lot since then. I think people understand that the president distorted reality. He misled us. He cherry-picked intelligence information. And there is a growing concern that he's trying to do the same thing with Iran. And Peter's question, Peter from Vermont a moment ago, raised a very important question, and that is, I think there has got to be some serious discussion with Iran. There's some indications that some years ago Iran reached out to the United States and that was rejected. I think we got to take a hard look at that. But the bottom line, Jim, is that, no, believe me, the sentiment in this country and the sentiment in Congress is now very, very, very different than it was before during the discussion over Iraq. And by the way, understand, and sometimes a lot of people don't know this, I'm an independent. I voted, obviously, against the war, was one of the leaders in opposition to it. But a strong majority, something like 58% of Democrats in the House, also voted against giving the president the authority to go to war. So not everybody did fall in line.
Bernice in Santa Fe, New Mexico. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, it's good to talk with you. I just have a statement of support, I think, in that I believe that you agree with this, but I just want you to know that there are so many of us out here who want the Democrats to go through with what they feel is right, regardless of polls, regardless of veto possibilities or cloture or any of that. So if we want to make a statement against the war, we make the statement against the war. We don't have to give in to Senator Lieberman. We just have to,
Bernice, I agree with you. And I think, that there is a growing sentiment in this country, and not just from Democrats or independents or progressives, but all across the board, many evangelical Christians are understanding that there is something fundamentally wrong in our country today, that we're moving in the wrong direction in almost every area, that it is not moral. You talk about morality, that we have the most unfair distribution of wealth and income of any major country. We have the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country. We're the only major country in the world without a national health care program. Our foreign policy is so wrong in so many ways. We have been behind the eight ball in terms of addressing global warming. So I think there is that sentiment out there on the part of the American people, and Congress is way behind, in my view, where the American people are. And we've got to move forward in a much more progressive way.
And this is why we, the people, need to be more active.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Pushing Congress. In fact, if I may, we had yesterday or the day before yesterday, I had a guest on who had set up town halls, as you suggested,
yes,
for four members of Congress in Oregon. And none of those members of Congress showed up.
Jesus.
And they had like hundreds of people in these, in one case over 1,000 people. None of the members of Congress showed up. And in the case of Greg Walden, congressman from Oregon, he refused to even send a representative.
Well, then that tells the people of Oregon or the people of America something about those representatives. The idea that a representative, I presume a meeting that was scheduled.
These were town hall meetings that were scheduled almost a year in advance.
Well, that's pretty amazing. But you see, in doing that, that will then tell constituents something about who is representing them.
Well,
and that's a good thing to do.
Well said. Paul in Flagstaff, Arizona. Paul, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi. Thanks for letting me talk. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool progressive, so, you know, I agree with most of what everybody's talking about. But I'm starting to get real disappointed in the way things are happening in D.C. And here's what I mean. Before the elections in November, all we heard from Democrats was that Republicans won't let anything out of committee, won't let anything on the floor, we can't get anything done. Elections come through, and now all we're seeing is, the Republicans add riders to bills, they block legislation, et cetera. And so my question is, how can it be that the Republicans can get their way, regardless of whether they're in the majority or the minority?
Okay, good question, Paul. And the answer is that they are not necessarily getting their way. Let me just go through a few things. In the House, the Democrats have fairly comfortable margins. In the House, you need 50% plus one to pass legislation. And under Nancy Pelosi, in my view, they've done a pretty good job passing a number of pieces of legislation. In the Senate, and everybody has to understand that it is a different world, you need 60 votes for cloture, which means that 41 people can prevent that. So far, the minimum wage has been raised, and that will be raised. A fairly strong, not as strong as I would like, ethics bill has been passed. And we're moving on global warming fairly strongly. Is it as fast as any of us would like? The answer is absolutely not. And the Republicans can slow up things, but with the support of the people, we can make some real changes.
Great. Senator Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment, 57 minutes past the hour.
Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour. Is the media biased to the left? Do we have a liberal media in the United States? I frankly... I think most of us think not, but there is a merry band and fairly persistent and quite outspoken and well heard across the media who suggests that liberal bias is here. It's growing. The Media Research Council, for example, just issued a news release. And NBC just lurched further. This is from Brent Bozell, Media Research Center President Brent Bozell. NBC just lurched further left politically with its choice of Keith Olbermann, a known liberal hero, to provide occasional commentary on the nightly news. And Mr. Olbermann, without a shred of evidence, has even suggested that the White House uses the terror alert code to manipulate public opinion. That's not commentary. That's delusional paranoia. With us to discuss this is Tim Graham. He's with the Media Research Center. MRC.org is the website. Do I have that right, Tim?
MRC.org.
Great. You're the director of media analysis. First of all, it seems like Keith Olbermann probably is a progressive, but he's followed by Joe Scarborough, who's a Republican.
Well.
So where's the liberal bias here? What am I missing?
Our old friend Joe tries very hard now not to be a Republican and regularly professes that he's left that all behind now. I think you could clearly say that...
Well, I think with regard to the war, he's left it behind, but with regard to everything else, he's still...
Scarborough's more a member of Team MSNBC than he's a member of Team GOP, and he actually regularly attacks us as less conservative than he is because we love Bush, which, you know, again, if you spent time around here, you'd see that's not really the case either. But I think the case here is that NBC Nightly News hasn't had a commentator on their airwaves now for about 10 years. The last time they had one, it was Bill Moyers, who you would also agree is progressive. And it's so it becomes an issue of, You know, how come the NBC Nightly News only seems to have the progressive commentator?
Well, before that, it was David Brinkley. And back when Bill Moyers was doing it, he was right down the middle. I remember those days. And I would suggest to you that his commentaries were not political. His commentaries were about, you know, what's happening in the day. But
I think you could come to the MRC website and see that's not the case. He was only on the Nightly News for a few months in 1995. And then he had some health troubles and didn't return. But his actual commentaries from that time are available on our website, and they were typically Bill Moyers.
So you've got a couple of commentaries, and one commentator here, Keith Olbermann, a known liberal hero, to quote you guys.
Well, no.
How does this indicate that the media has taken a swung to the left? I mean, you got Tucker Carlson there's just a whole over at CNN, for example, Glenn Beck, you know? I mean, it's like, where are the liberals on CNN?
Well, Glenn Beck's on headline news. He's not on CNN proper.
Right. He's where people think they're getting news.
Well, yeah.
That's even more egregious.
That is odd. No, that's an odd decision where they said headline news doesn't sell in prime time, so we'll have Nancy Grace and Glenn Beck.
Well, no, it's the Foxification of CNN. Everybody is, you know, for a while there, Fox News was doing good and increasing in their ratings, and it seems like everybody else tried to swing to the right.
Yeah, but, I mean, CNN's also, speaking of liberal commentators, CNN is also the network of Jack Cafferty. He's constantly measuring Karl Rove for prison stripes and
maybe that's legitimate. I mean, Jack Cafferty is the Republican. He used to be the conservative commentator on the morning show.
Well, it's not what he is now. So, I mean, the idea that CNN is somehow in danger of becoming Fox News is not supported by the fact.
So might it be, Tim Graham, Director of Media Analysis at the Media Research Center, MRC.org, might it be, Tim, that with Jack Cafferty and with Joe Scarborough and all these guys deserting your side, as it were, might it be that they're doing it for an actual legitimate reason, which is that George W. Bush is the worst president we've ever had in the history of this country, that he did lie us into a war, that the American people are not behind him, that they're simply reflecting, A, reality, and, B, broad public opinion, and this has nothing to do with liberal or conservative.
It has everything to do with liberal and conservative. If we accept your premise, and that is that everybody's moving to the left to go where are the fashionable people.
Well, let's take out left
and right.
Then
they're going to the left. I mean,
well,
no
well, let's,
to the
let's
left.
Take out left and right. What's conservative about invading a country that represents no threat to you?
Well, it's a liberal assumption to say Iraq posed no threat to us.
No, it's a statement of fact.
In fact, you were way to the left of John Kerry and Hillary Clinton and John Edwards at that point. You know, maybe not now. You have a bunch of Democrats who, you know, were for it before they were against it. Now nobody can keep track of their record.
But the reality is that Iraq posed no threat to the United States, and outside
that's
of
not
that,
a, well, I obviously disagree with that. But I'm saying to you simply, from the bigger picture of media bias, is that even if Jack Cafferty moved from right to left, or Joe Scarborough moved from conservative congressman to NBC boss smooching centrist. This is the that's still moving to the left. That's the point we were trying to make. The media landscape is moving to the left. Now you can say, well, the political landscape is moving to the left also. So you can either say, okay, the liberal media is following along the liberal politicians, or the other way around. Doesn't really matter. You're still making my argument.
But okay, all right. Well, you know, I'll give you that to a certain extent. But I would say beyond that, if you look at the vast stretch of media. I mean, I'm seeing on, you know, it's the old MediaMatters.org phrase, you know, if it's Sunday, it must be conservative. I'm seeing on Tim Russert's show, you know, about 2-to-1 ratio of Republicans to Democrats. I'm seeing this, you know, right across the board on the Talking Head show, by and large. I'm seeing real progressives, Peter like Katrina VandeHeuvel and Amy Goodman, absolutely or very rarely represented at all on network television.
Well,
and the people who are represented as liberals tend to be the milquetoast Democrats, the DLC Democrats, who are all the time hogging FaceTime. I'm seeing very little actual left on the mainstream media. I'm seeing a lot of real hardcore right, but not a lot of actual left.
Well, a lot of that's based on where you are in the political spectrum, and that is that, you know, I can tell you that most of the Republicans that come on to represent the Republicans are milquetoast, you know, from a conservative perspective. But, again, you still have to say, when it comes down to it, does one party get this many and this many? And, I, the, you know, I'll... we've been around this block before with the Media Matters type of analysis, and that is to somehow suggest that you can measure the bias of a program, that it leans conservative based solely on which guests appear, and utterly ignoring the kind of questions or the kind of statements that Tim Russert makes or that the journalist panel at the end makes. You don't actually have to spend any time actually watching the programs. Well, that's quick and dirty, but it's not, again, it's not a coming to the table and trying to determine what evidence do you have, what facts do you have, other than saying, hey, McCain was on.
Great. Then let's look at the issues. Let's look at the fact that the media, the mainstream media in the United States, was absolutely complicit with Bush in lying us into a war in Iraq. And now they're ramping up for a war in Iran. And there was plenty of evidence. I mean, there was so much evidence laying around back before, in late 2002, that this was nonsense. There was so much evidence laying around that literally millions of people went into the streets all over the world to say, don't do this war.
Okay, that's an opinion, but I would say this to you. If you go back and look at the actual media coverage in late 2002 and early 2003, the standard left critique basically suggests the media failed because they failed to stop the war. And unless they stop the war, they're not truly left. If you actually look at the coverage they did a lot of coverage about how this war was, there was a rush to war, was a very common thing. They did raise questions, lots of questions. If you look at the kind of questions that President Bush received at press conferences, it didn't please the left, but those were questions that basically suggested in 2003 that Iraq would turn into Vietnam.
No, but in 2002, I mean, FAIR did this study where they found that there were hundreds, as I recall, it was over 500 people who were proponents of the war, who were guests on the major cable and network shows, and fewer than a dozen opponents of the war in the 2 months leading up to the war. I mean, it was a virtual blackout of opponents to the war.
Wrong, because the way FAIR counts it is to say that unless you're an actual member of a peace group, then you don't count. So they would say if you had John Kerry and Hillary Clinton on to discuss the war, they're both pro-war, they don't count. I imagine if you had young legislator Obama on to oppose the war, he wouldn't count either because he's not a member of an official,
non-profit. No, he would have counted because he was speaking out against the war.
FAIR uses these cockamamie standards that if you are a general, then you're pro-war. Obviously, you can see that there's been a number of generals now who have not been in favor of the Bush strategy. So you can't just simply say, oh, they wear a general hat, therefore they're on the right.
Interesting. All righty, Tim Graham. He's the director of media analysis at the Media Research Center, the website mrc.org. Tim, thanks for being with us today.
Sure.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour at the Tom Hartman radio program. Is there a bias in the media on the left? We can talk about it. 1-866-303-2270. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
And welcome back. For your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity, it's the Tom Hartman Program, 21 minutes past the hour here on Air America Radio. Is there a liberal bias to the media, or is this Lee Atwater's strategy being continued to play out? I'm frankly of the opinion it's the latter. Lee Atwater, of course, the advisor to Ronald Reagan, who came up with a phrase, smash-mouth politics, the politics of personal destruction, try to destroy people based on personal things rather than issues, number one. And number two, try to play the refs. It's all about play the refs. If you can get the refs, the mainstream media, to be convinced that they have some sort of a liberal bias, that the conservatives are being disadvantaged, that media is not fair, then, or just sensitize them, just poke them with a sharp stick every time they say something liberal, hey, we should have a national healthcare system. What? you know, maybe we should actually stop borrowing money in our children's name to give tax cuts to billionaires.
What?
You know, and just go after them with that sharp stick. And frankly, I think that, in my opinion, that's a process that is continuing to this day. Yes, there is a liberal media. You're listening to it. But it is not the largest voice in America at this point. But Danny in Los Angeles, you disagree with me. So.
Yes, sir. I do believe that there is a liberal media because of the ubiquitous nature of political correctness, which is cultural Marxism, which has found its way into every avenue of American life. And the fact that it is so absolutely rampant in our society where we believe...
Danny, are you being serious?
I'm being very serious.
Okay.
I agree in political science. Yes,
what
sir.
What is...
Yes, sir. I've been in the military. I've been in college. I've traveled all over this country. And the ubiquitous nature of political correctness is such that we believe that we can predicate morality based on certain key words. And if you don't think the media isn't in bed with these people, well, you, sir, are possessed by Satan.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. Lauren, we... Danny, thanks a lot for trying. Good try. Dana in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Dana.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Tom,
I think your last caller and Tim from the MRC are drinking from the same juice bottle.
Yeah.
A couple of things I want to make clear. The comments Tim makes are almost crazy when you consider the fact that just less than a month ago, Murdoch, head of News Corp, admitted, quote, supporting the White House's agenda. I mean, this is all you need to know from an organization that hires people like Ann Coulter and Malkin and Kondracki and Pat Buchanan over and over and over again with absolutely no balance whatsoever. The other thing that's interesting, he comments about Cafferty and Scarborough as not being what they used to be. Well, that's true of what's going on in America. The numbers that are driving the president's polls down, down, down are not coming from people from the center or the left. They're coming from people from the right who are seeing the light.
Yeah.
And that's what's changing. And so Cafferty and Scarborough have reflected that change.
Yeah, Cafferty used to drive me crazy when he was on the morning show on CNN because he was always the Republican guy who was always making cynical comments about Democrats and he wanted more tax cuts and he
would
openly attack liberals and he was proud that he was a Republican and his curmudgeon routine that he does now frankly, is very rare. In fact, I can't recall a time that I saw him do it, heard him do it, that I would say it was partisan. It tends to be issue-based.
That's
and,
correct.
And the fact of the matter is the issues are skewing against the Republicans because they've just screwed things up so badly.
Well, here's what I'd like to ask Tim from the MRC. I'd like to say to him, well, it sounds to me like you're a perfect candidate to support the return of the fairness doctrine. If you're so concerned about a liberal bias in the media, well, by all means, let's bring back the fairness doctrine and ensure that we have balanced reporting in this country.
Yeah.
And let's add another thing to it. Let's break up these medias that control thousands and thousands of stations controlled by, you know, one board of directors. And let's break this up and put communications in this country back in the hands of broadcasters as opposed to corporations for profit.
Yeah, let me give you my take on both those issues. Number one, on the fairness doctrine, I worked in radio back in the late 60s and early 70s
when,
under the fairness doctrine. And and we had a local talk show on the station that I did news on for years and years. And we just didn't touch politics because, you know, you didn't want to get entangled with the fairness doctrine. So in that regard, I don't want that thing coming back. Number two, as far as media consolidation being the thing that's causing right-wing talk radio across the country, I'm broadly in favor of enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act. I don't think that media companies should be owned by, for example, defense contractors, and I think that there should be limits on how much media can be controlled in any particular marketplace. I don't think that that's what's driving right-wing talk radio. I think what's driving right-wing talk radio is that it was profitable for a long time, and it still is. And as progressive talk radio, as our programming gets better and better, and as we pick up more and more voices and we have more and more success stories of stations who are making a profit, we're going to catch up. It's just that for a long time, you know, people thought that the only talk radio out there, the only talk radio anybody wanted to listen to is conservative, is this herd mentality in the radio industry, as I'm sure you're familiar with, Dana. And so I think it's going to come around. And yeah, I agree. We do need some structural changes, but I think the biggest one is we need to be successful in promoting progressive talk radio, which means, and Dana, thanks for the call, which means listen to the sponsors who are coming up in a minute and patronize them. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
No! Definitely not! Welcome back to the real free speech zone. It's the Tom Hartman radio program on Air America Radio, 34 minutes past the hour. Yes, George W. Bush.
Yeah.
We'll start that over.
We found the weapons of mass destruction. You know, we found biological laboratories. But for those who say we haven't found the banned manufacturing devices or banned weapons, they're wrong. We found them.
Uh-huh, yeah. I was on Polish TV some while back. He never said oops. Never said oops, I guess I was wrong. Never withdrew from that. Never stepped back from that. And of course, it's, you know, it's simply a variation on his earlier statement.
First, I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons. While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of potential money for contractors.
If we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do, does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
Well, actually, he was writing a romance novel. Does it make any sense for the world to wait while he finishes his romance novel? Oh, no, we can't have that. And now it's the same thing all over again. The Bush administration has demanded that Israel stop talking to Syria. Do you get this? Syria, Damascus, the Bashir government came out and said that they were interested in having peace talks with Israel. This could be like one of those, you know, Cairo-Jerusalem moments from back when it was Sadat and Begin. If Syria were to enter into a state of peace with Israel, this would be a major positive thing for peace in the region. And you would think that the United States would be in favor of that, unless maybe we're intending to attack Syria. Well, now Condi Rice, meeting with Israeli officials, quote, was forceful in expressing Washington's view on the matter of Israel having conversations with Syria about peace between those two countries. She said, and I quote, "Don't even think about it," end quote. I mean, where are these people taking us? Well, it's becoming increasingly obvious and increasingly troublesome. This morning, looking through the Wall Street Journal, I tore out two stories. One was a kind of a good on you story. Pressing ahead with this new strategy to attack the economic engine that fuels most illegal immigration into the United States, Homeland Security agents arrested three top executives of a national cleaning service for allegedly employing illegal immigrants and defrauding the government. This company, they say, took in more than $54.3 million between 2001 and 2005. According to the 23-count indictment, the company knowingly hired illegal immigrants, intentionally failed to withhold taxes, and created shell accounts to line the pockets of top executives. So this is the kind of stuff that Reagan set up. And it's been going on basically ever since. And you wonder why, if, you know, all these people are here illegally. More recently, they say the Department of Homeland Security has decided to target company executives who may know about and benefit from illegal hiring practices. Now, obviously, this was a highly egregious. But in 2006, 716 criminal arrests. And this is a 700% of executives, right, apparently. No, I'm sorry. This is worksite enforcement. That would include, quote, illegal immigrants, end quote. But nonetheless, which I think is a shame. I mean, you know, I don't think we should be criminalizing people. We should be criminalizing business behavior. But anyhow, they say that's a 700% increase since 2002. So sort of a mixed good on you. But the other one was Baghdad surge returns Chalabi to center stage. Political survivor gets posed as a public liaison. Does bigger role loom? This article by Yachai Drazen in today's Wall Street Journal, right on the front page of today's Wall Street Journal. Ahmed Chalabi, the guy who was being paid $335,000 a month by the Pentagon, the Defense Intelligence Agency, actually, to feed information to us. His Iraqi National Congress was given $39 million over a five-year period. This is the guy who was convicted in Jordan of bank fraud and sentenced to over 20 years of hard labor. And now he's going to be the great hope for Iraq? And it looks like he's answering, well, according to the article in the Wall Street Journal, he is now answering directly to Maliki, to the head guy in Iraq. Chalabi, by the way, was the source for the phony Judy Miller stories. He's the guy who was handing her all this stuff that she was tossing on the front page. Phony claims that Saddam had 20 secret WMD sites. All this, it was all bogus. So, anyhow, it's not a healthy thing. So a few of the things that are in the news right now that I think we should all be a little concerned about, and we certainly should know about and keep track of. Joe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind today?
Tom, first of all, I enjoy your program. You are absolutely refreshing.
Thank you.
When you have Mr. Sanders on, he talked about the American people having to get used to possibly higher taxes for these things. And I would like to see an approach of more fiscal responsibility on the part of the politicians. And let's talk about more taxes, but more fiscal responsibility. And let me present one idea to you. If this bogus war that's being conducted in Iraq was, if we had to hold the Bush administration fiscally responsible, it wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
They have borrowed the money from China and Japan.
Sure, for every penny of it.
Right. If they didn't have the money, if they couldn't have borrowed the money, we wouldn't have had this war.
Yeah.
These politicians have got to start talking about being fiscally responsible, just like when we run our families. Anyways. Have a great weekend, Tom.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Joe. You know, your point is really well taken, and it raises two important issues. The first is the actual cost of the war in Iraq. And in fact, if you go over to costofwar.com, they've got a great little clock. So far, according to their clock, $368,705,530,622, and it's cranking along. They just spent another $100,000. There goes another $100,000. Have been spent in Iraq. With that money that has been spent so far, now this is not the trillion that it's estimated it's going to cost or the half a billion that has been so far pretty much allocated, but just the $368 billion that has been spent, we could have provided 17 million full four-year scholarships at public universities to students in the United States. You want to make America competitive in the world? 17,874,036 full four-year scholarships. Well, you say, well, but a lot of our kids can't even go to college because they're not all that literate. Well, we could have sent 48 million children to Head Start with the cost of the war in Iraq. 48,835,189. I mean, you're getting it. There are some real and genuine costs here. And we could have hired at full union salaries and benefits 6,389,715 public school teachers for a year with what we've spent so far in Iraq. 6 million new teachers. So that, number one, yes, the cost of Iraq is absurd and obscene. And number two, it's all been borrowed money. In fact, virtually everything Bush has done from day one has been borrowed money. He's raised the deficit faster and by a larger amount than any president in the history of the United States, even Ronald Reagan, who Ronald Reagan had borrowed more money than all other presidents before him, all the way back to George Washington, combined. So, number one, anything that looks like fiscal sanity or looks like, hey, the economy's doing fine, is entirely on borrowed money. Number two, yesterday I'm here in New York City, and I was out doing some visiting potential advertisers and doing some sales calls, and one of the guys that was with us was an ad sales guy, and a very nice guy, and who worked for a company that sells advertising without more detail. And he says, "What do you think about Obama and Giuliani?" He says, "I think Obama's a great guy." And I said, "I do too." And he says, "But I'd never vote for him." And I said, "Why?" He says, expecting him to say something racist or whatever. He says, "Because I'm a Republican." And I said, "Oh, you're a Republican." He says, "Yeah, I'd never vote for a Democrat. You know why?" And I said, "Why?" He says, "Because I want my tax cuts." And, I didn't get enough. As we were walking into the sales call, it's like I didn't go any farther. That's where our conversation ended, basically. But it's like, wait a minute. You want your tax cuts. Your tax cuts are, in other words, you want your children and your grandchildren to pay for your lifestyle. You want your children and grandchildren to pay for the country. I mean, this is fiscal insanity raised to an art form. People say, well, the economy was great under Reagan. The economy looks pretty good under Bush. Well, actually, it doesn't. But nonetheless, they say that. Well, yeah, you give me a credit card with a $1 billion line of credit. You give me a credit card with a $1 million line of credit on it that I don't have to pay back, that my children and grandchildren have to pay back. I can show you what it looks like to live large. So here we have George W. Bush borrowing trillions of dollars, thousands of billions of dollars, and spending it and saying, hey, look at the economy, looks pretty good. Somebody's injecting some money into the economy. Yeah, it's our children and our grandchildren. We're going to pay this year $150 billion in interest just on the money Reagan borrowed. 45 minutes past the hour.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at
6636023 Welcome back. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, 9 minutes before the hour. We're going to get back to your calls right after the news at the top of the hour. But first, Victoria Jones is with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. TalkRadioNews.com, an accredited White House reporter and Capitol reporter, all the credentials and everything. And speaking of Americans, also an American citizen, Victoria, even though you have that funny way of talking.
I know, I've got that. Can't get rid of it.
You can't, huh?
Can't take the Brit out of the girl.
I guess. So what's happening in Washington, D.C. today?
Well, we had some very interesting dancing steps that we observed by Tony Fratto, who's a deputy White House press secretary who did both the gaggle and the briefing today, as he was asked a lot of questions about the 2002 war authorization that the Senate, most particularly Joe Biden, is attempting to repeal, basically.
Right.
And, he was asked whether the White House is going to push back against the effort by the Democrats in the Senate to revoke this. He said he wouldn't talk about hypothetical legislation, but then went on to speak quite eloquently and at some length, actually, about hypothetical legislation as more and more questions come in. But he said that deauthorization is operable. He also went on to talk about UN Security Council resolutions, which he seems to think bolster this. But what was bizarre about both the UN Security Council resolutions bolstering it and the resolution itself is that this is all irrelevant because he also believes that the Constitution gives them authority to do whatever they like anyway.
Now, he didn't explicitly say that.
We didn't put it in the language that I'm using, but he did say that the Constitution gives him authority.
authority unilaterally without, I mean, the Constitution explicitly says that the power to declare war exists solely with the Congress.
Well, we're not talking about, the words declare war were not used.
So, bombing another country, invading them, taking down their government, seizing their buildings.
Oh, you're so picky!
Yeah, this is not war, what is it?
You're so picky!
I know, it's just, it's probably one of my worst personality characteristics. I guess I should get over it.
He was asked, interestingly, whether now that the weapons of mass destruction have not been found, was it not reasonable for the Democrats to say that it's at least time for a revision?
Yeah.
And Fratter went back to the language all means necessary, which were words he said he remembered that gave the president authorization, and that because of that, nevertheless, this still stands, and he was unmovable on it.
Yeah. But Bush was saying, I mean, you know, Bush was pretty explicit. You know, when they got the satellite photo of the 12 foot wingspan balsa wood model airplane that Uday and Kusei used to play with, you know, he just went off on that, for example.
We've also discovered through intelligence that Iraq has a growing fleet of manned and unmanned aerial vehicles that could be used to disperse chemical or biological weapons across broad areas. We're concerned that Iraq is exploring ways of using these UAVs for missions targeting the United States.
I mean, here's Bush telling us that we're in imminent danger from Uday or Kusei's model airplane, while Saddam is spending all his time writing a romance novel. And the CIA knows that. I mean, they know that. And Feith is gathering he's gathering intelligence in the Office of Special Plans that contradicts what the entire intelligence community is saying, because, you know, Cheney and Rumsfeld and presumably Bush are telling him to. All of these things that Bush said, I mean, all of them, the whole bunch of them. Here's another one.
This is a massive stockpile of biological weapons and is capable of killing millions. We know that the regime has produced thousands of tons of chemical agents, including mustard gas, sarin nerve gas, VX nerve gas.
I mean, there's all these statements that Bush made to justify this war. None of them were true. They knew at the time that they weren't true. Or at least there was plenty of intelligence demonstrating that they weren't true. You had the inspectors on the ground, Hans Blix looking for chemical and biological weapons. You had Mohammed al-Baradei from the IAEA looking for nuclear weapons. They were coming before the United Nations and testifying that, A, they were getting full cooperation, and, B, they were finding nothing. And if they just had a couple more weeks, they were pretty sure that they could prove that Saddam Hussein had, in fact, shut down all his programs, and that what he had and what he might have had left over was, in fact, destroyed by Scott Ritter, as Ritter had testified to. And he went to war anyway. I mean, how can they possibly say, in the face of all this historical evidence, that they still have authorization for a war that was authorized based on these lies that we just heard Bush say.
There's a slightly Alice in Wonderlandish answer to that, which is that basically, you know, you go to war for whatever the reasons were you go to the war, but you have to stay in the war because that's the war you've got. Kind of a version of Donald Rumsfeld, you know, that you go to war with the uniform you've got, but you stay in because that's the war that you've got.
Right, but it's not even the war we've got anymore, because now it's a civil war that we're watching.
Well, we're watching, but being targeted at the same time.
Right, yeah, I mean, what's happening all around, the vast majority of the people being murdered in Baghdad and across Iraq are not Americans. They're Iraqis killing Iraqis. I mean, we are watching a civil war unfold, and in places we're trying to stop it or slow it down, but some would argue that civil war in large part one of the things that's fueling that civil war is our presence.
Nevertheless, the administration was unmovable on that. They also had something to say on the subject of Iran.
Yeah.
And
what was that?
Well, the Security Council's meeting next week. I asked a question about whether the administration was at odds with itself, with Vice President Cheney saying all options are on the table and leaning towards a military option, and Secretary Rice leaning towards a diplomatic option. And I was firmly corrected and told that they speak with one voice and that there's no light can be seen between the members of the administration.
Amazing. And now, very quickly, what's the deal with Condi Rice telling Israel that they can't negotiate peace with Syria?
I think that there is a concern that things could get out of control, and that we want to be sure, basically, of everything that's going on.
In other words, we don't want two sovereign nations to talk to each other about peace because we can't control the process?
I think there's a concern.
This seems pathological to me, Victoria.
I can't speak for the Secretary of State.
No, I understand, and you're a news reporter, not an opinion person, and I respect that. And
I could be completely wrong because I don't entirely understand.
The yeah. Well, we'll see how it shakes out. Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service. We'll be back right after the news.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio. Proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, fair and slightly unbalanced.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour, the third hour of our program today. It's Friday, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, whatever's appropriate for you. I hope you're planning a great weekend and going to have a good time and a safe time. There's so much in the news. Michelle Malkin, isn't this exciting? She's going to co-host a new Fox show, yes. The Fair and Balanced Network is practicing being even more fair and balanced.
Yes, we're the mainstream media. We got no biases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Congressman Duncan Hunter, this is from ThinkProgress.org, the Center for American Progress. Representative Duncan Hunter, the Republican from California, yesterday named the South Carolina advisors to his presidential campaign. One of them, Lewis Eagle, boasted about her hardline views on immigration, explaining, quote, that when an illegal immigrant with three children came to her office this week asking for free legal help for an abused child, she told the immigrant to, quote, get back to Mexico, end quote. Another Hunter advisor, this is Duncan Hunter, this is unbelievable. Another advisor of his, Dr. Henry Jordan, declared last year, quote, I mean, you've got to be stupid to believe in evolution. I mean, really. End quote. Meanwhile, Colin Powell gave a speech yesterday at Purdue University. And for some reason, the Lafayette, Indiana Journal-Courier and Courier and the Associated Press reported that Powell, quote, said he supported President Bush's decision to send more troops to Iraq. End quote. So the folks over at the Think Progress blog called up Powell's office and said, did he really say that? And they said, no, he didn't say that. In fact, Jeannie, I think it is, Norberg, a spokeswoman for Purdue who attended the speech, confirmed with us, that would be with thinkprogress.org, that Powell did not say he supported Bush's escalation. He has previously stated his opposition to Bush's escalation strategy on Face the Nation, CBS's show, back on December 17th. He said, quote, I have not seen a case that persuades me that Iraqi security would be better with more forces, end quote. So what he said, actually, in his speech was the surge is on and will soon be finished while Congress debates it, and we'll have to see whether it works and we'll have to pass off to the Iraqis sooner or later. Now, it's not a statement of support. So why is the Associated Press reporting that Colin Powell is saying he's gung-ho for George Bush? Well, it must just be that liberal bias. That's got to be it. It's just got to be that liberal bias. Jeff in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Great show today.
Thank you.
I just wanted to refute something Tim Graham said from the Media Research Center.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, speaking as a liberal blogger, you know, part of the so-called liberal media, I just don't know what the hell that guy is talking about. Corporate media.
Well, what he's talking about is that isn't it terrible that Keith Olbermann now has a slot on MSNBC that he just got his contract renewed for, and that from time to time he'll be providing commentary on NBC, and he's an unabashed, at least moderate, if not a good progressive. I mean, you know, I have a lot of respect for
Keith
Olbermann.
Yeah, wow, we added one liberal to the stable
right.
of our corporate right-wing vultures. That's, oh, we're
that's,
moving to the left.
That's the point. I mean, you said you don't know what he's talking about. That's it.
I just wanted to tell all our listeners and viewers and people who are new to the show, this is the liberal media.
Yeah, here we are.
It's growing. It's yeah. growing, but it's nowhere near there yet. I want everybody to imagine what would happen if we really had a liberal media. If Ralph Nader was on the the Fox network every day, if Michael Moore's documentaries were played on primetime, I mean, everything would be different.
If Robert Greenwald was the regular commentator if McLaughlin Group, instead of having Tony Snow, you know, from the Mooney, the Washington Times, and Pat Buchanan, who's to the right of, Attila the Hun. Well, Pat Buchanan in some ways actually is kind of semi-reasonable, but he's also, an extreme right winger. Poor Eleanor, all by herself there. And sometimes they'll throw in somebody who's sort of moderate, maybe. But it's like, anyway, you get me started.
Well,
I'll let you finish your point, Jeff.
This story may have missed a lot of people, but David Geffen, who's a big media mogul out here on the West Coast, he had some nasty things to say about Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And every media report I went to, every major one anyway, dropped the little tidbit of information that he was mad at them, at the Clintons, for basically saying they pardoned Leonard Peltier and then not doing it.
Mm.
And that was it. If we had a liberal media, the name of Leonard Peltier would be on everyone's lips for a week.
Yeah, well, or
Leonard
Peltier
was
for what?
Innocent.
It's been for 10 years.
He was innocent. He was railroaded in a kangaroo court. And what he was doing when he was arrested was standing in solidarity with other Native Americans.
Right, and he's still in jail, by the way. And he's still in jail.
The FBI was working with goon squads to steal their land because there was uranium there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a real story.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to talk about that.
No. Yeah, no. Because the liberal media is just so liberal that they just don't. Yeah. It's almost like, they're so liberal that they don't even talk about reality. Because, Jeff, the things that you're talking about, I mean, if we talk liberal versus conservative, we're talking ideology, then really what we're talking about are the fundamental differences in ideology between liberal and conservatives. Conservatives believe in a small ruling elite, a meritocracy, or in the conservatives in Europe, hereditary leadership, ownership. They believe that a small number of people should own most of the wealth, that there should be a very small and quiet middle class, that there should be a very large class of working poor. I mean, these are traditional conservative positions. And liberals historically, the liberal thinking coming, which came out of the Enlightenment in the 1600s, Rousseau, Locke, Jefferson in the 1700s, and all these guys, they believe that the people should have the power, that there should be access to things like free education, to increase social mobility. Jeff, I'm going to drop you because you're your pots and pans are falling all over there. But anyhow, you got me going on this rant. I'll finish it. And it's not even about liberal and conservative, is my point, is that the real liberal and conservative positions, I mean, the liberal positions that we should have national health care, that we should have free college education all the way through PhD if necessary. I mean, these are things that are just like normal in 37 out of the 38 industrialized countries in the world. I mean, just normal that we should have social security that is comprehensive and complete enough, and Medicare that's comprehensive and complete enough that when people retire and go into their old age, they don't have to worry that, that they can actually, hey, I put in my 30 or 40 years in the workforce and now I'm taking time off. That stuff is not, I mean, that is not even what it's about. It's about things like your point about Leonard Peltier. That's not liberal or conservative. That's reality versus let's not talk about reality. And the media biases, and let's talk about Britney Spears all day. I mean, and in fact, actually, we had a segment planned for this week that we never got to about Britney Spears and about, what's her name? The young woman who died recently. And the whole point was that, this hypersexualization of kids, basically, and, the young girls following this, and they're all wanting to be bad girls, as it was, and just the selling of this, and the selling of people, for that matter, of Britney, getting caught up into it. The real story here isn't whether or not Britney Spears is shaving her head. The real story is there a machine, in essence, that makes an enormous profit off people like her and then eats her alive? And the same with Anna Nicole Smith and et cetera. And there is, frankly, there is. John in Studio City, California. Hey, John, welcome to the hang on just a second here. Hey, John, welcome to the program. We just have a minute before we have to take a break. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I'll make it quick then. I just wanted to appreciate you talking about that woman named Amy Gooden.
Yeah. Amy Goodman's one of the best. She's a friend, and I have so much respect for her. She's probably the best journalist in America.
Okay, let me make this quick. I will say that a lot of people would call her so-called left-wing, her and her Pacifica radio network, in the same way that Fox News Network and Hannity would be called right-wing. But I think that the more important bias is the bias against reality.
Yeah.
And reality would be much better served if these media outlets would be supported by more directly by the listeners, like the Pacifica Foundation, Radio Foundation is, instead of the commercial entities, which seem to be bringing them to the dance. And
well, it could be. I mean, now you've got Bush stacking the board of directors of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with Republicans, and you know they're all getting all very, very paranoid. And I'm not willing to depend on charity, frankly, for the news. I salute Pacifica, but, you know, I'd be great if you guys would patronize our sponsors. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. Transforming the World by Revitalizing Democracy. Radio, 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Mark in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm great, but I'll get better.
Good. Hey, I've been giving a lot of thought to this issue of media bias in the last 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
I was working late last night and driving around. And my local radio station did a small blip on the Governor Perry Merck scandal.
Right.
And I found it very strange. I'm in Pittsburgh. I don't know much about Texas politics. But I found it very strange that they never mentioned which party that Governor Perry is affiliated with.
Right, the Republican governor of Texas.
So I went home to watch my local news broadcast. And I did not find out there because they never mentioned the story. And that brings me to the two examples of media bias that I see, the one that you touched on a little bit.
Yeah.
The first one being that you would do a story like that and not mention that he's Republican. Given what I know of the station who was reporting and the fact that they didn't mention it, I had a pretty
good... Well, it's not so much that they have an obligation to mention that he's a Republican, but that... that whenever it's a Democrat who's in trouble, the Democrat definitely gets named.
Yes, definitely. And then I felt like my local TV news broadcast was even more insidious in the fact that, what do you have, 15 minutes of news by the time you take out weather, sports, and commercials, and out of that 15 minutes they spent 6 on Britney Spears and Anna Nicole Smith without ever mentioning...
See, this Mark, gets back to the point that I was making earlier about the guy from the ad agency that I was going out with yesterday. You know, there were a couple of us going on these sales calls, and he was, like I said, he was a very nice guy, you know, a good guy, good parent, good American, patriotic, decent, I like him. And he thinks, he really and truly believes that the Republican Party is in favor, the 2 points he made, you know, that he wants to be able to own a gun. I'm not sure why. Maybe he thinks he needs it for protection here in Manhattan or something. But, you know, he really believes that the Republican Party says you should own a gun and you're going to get tax cuts. And the Democratic Party says you shouldn't own a gun and we're going to raise your taxes. And that really and truly is pretty much the limit of his entire universe of understanding of politics. And it's not that he's a dumb guy. He's a very hardworking guy, and I don't think, frankly, he has a lot of time to pay attention to politics, which means that these are the messages that are bleeding through the mainstream media and becoming the dominant memes in our society, and that's what so concerns me.
Right. How can there be a half-hour TV news broadcast that doesn't mention Scooter Libby or Perry and Merck?
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is. Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Benjamin in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Benjamin.
Yeah, Yes, thanks, Tom, for taking my call.
Sure.
And I will be supporting your sponsors.
Thank you.
Yes.
Because that's how you support the show, and that's how you support the radio station. It's real simple.
Exactly, and everyone should pay attention to that because it's very simple. It's not rocket science.
Yep.
Now, I was listening to Bill Moyer's Capital Crimes last night, and it brought back to mind the Jack Abramoff scandal in Florida, because
mm-hmm.
he was actually connected to Sun Cruise casinos,
mm-hmm.
in which there was a murder. And,
That's right. The guy that he bought the thing from or sold it to or something like that was murdered, and that's a thousand times more intense than the whole Vince Foster suicide thing. But we never heard much about that, did we?
No, because it was basically swept under the rug because, of course, there was Jeb Bush as the governor of Florida. And also, and this is some of the juicy details, the four of the terrorists that flew the planes into the World Trade Center was caught on tape in those casinos.
Oh, in the very casinos that Jack Abramoff bought and that the guy who sold them to him got murdered.
Yes.
Interesting.
So I feel that, I mean, because we're dealing with a situation with a president that's gone awry and is basically...
It's like circles within circles. I mean, this is as weird as Bush's dad having breakfast with Bin Laden's brother or half-brother at the exact same moment that the Twin Towers were being hit, which is nobody's disputing. I mean, it's like at a certain level, at a certain point, you say, wait a minute, there's just so many coincidences here. And I'm not saying that that has any specific significance, but there's just so much weird stuff going on. Why doesn't somebody look into it? Benjamin, excellent point. Thank you for the call. We have to take a break here. It's 27 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, the place where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. It's all about democracy and you and me in it. We'll be right back.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call
34 minutes past the hour. You are smack dab in the middle of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Oh, some might call it the vast liberal conspiracy. I can call it either one. Take no imitations, though. The Tom Hartman radio program here on Air America Radio, 34 minutes past the hour. And our telephone number, 1-866-440. Excuse me. That's our old phone number, 866-303-2270. There we go. Julian's going, what? What? Lauren, hey, wait a minute. I thought I gave you that. Yes, you did. Thank you very much. And Andrew here also keeping everybody. I'm broadcasting live, by the way, all this week, today, the last day, from Air America headquarters in New York City, in the main studio. And it's like being in a spaceship. It's such a hoot. Anyhow, back to the telephones. Ian in San Francisco, California. Hey, Ian, what's up?
Hi, how you doing, Tom? Yeah, I just wanted to throw in some thoughts here on this Iran issue.
Yeah.
I think we got to get smart, those of us who don't want to see another war. And by that I mean we've got the UN, and it sounds like, well, the UN has said something and Iran's not doing it, and apparently that may be true. But what we have to understand is this is all part of a treaty, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Right.
And what it is a treaty between those states that have nuclear weapons and those that don't. Some have not joined, like Israel hasn't. But
Or India. I mean,
okay.
That's the bigger case in point, because Bush just went over and gave them nuclear technology and didn't ask them to dismantle, gave them nuclear technology that can't be used to make nukes, because the nuclear reactors that they have right now can be used to make nukes, and did not ask them to dismantle them. And they've already made nukes.
Exactly. Now, the what I wanted to point out here is that what the UN Security Council is essentially represented by the nuclear weapon states.
Right.
That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
And so they're telling a non-nuclear weapons state that they don't want them to acquire nuclear weapons. And I can understand why they don't. But the treaty that we all signed, all both sides, nuclear weapons states, non-nuclear weapons states, signed in 1970, said that the non-nuclear weapons states wouldn't try to acquire nuclear weapons. They could have nuclear power. They could enrich uranium for nuclear power.
Which you have to do, by the way. You have to, it comes in at a tenth of a percent. You have to enrich it up to around 3% for it to work in a reactor.
So they can do that. But here's what's not happening. All the focus is on what the non-nuclear weapon states are not doing correctly.
Right.
But the nuclear weapon states promised in that treaty that they would reduce and work to eliminate nuclear weapons.
That's right, all nuclear
weapons. Nobody is looking at that at all.
Right.
And you see, the International Atomic Energy Agency doesn't have the right under that treaty to inspect the nuclear weapon states.
Right.
Only the
non-nuclear
weapon
states. This was, if I recall correctly, when this came about, this was when Nixon came back from Russia and gave the speech about we no longer need to live in an era of fear.
Yeah.
And he gave that big speech about essentially the Cold War is over in that we no longer need to be in a state of fear. And within a couple of years, he was out on his butt. Jerry Ford was in. And two guys in the Ford administration started the Committee for Present Danger and started hyping up the idea that the Soviet Union had weapons of mass destruction, specifically submarines that were undetectable by current technology, that were so deadly that they could literally be, 15 miles off the coast of New York City and take out the entire eastern seaboard before we would even have an opportunity to set up our defenses. And therefore, we had to start pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into defense to take them on, and we had to start building new nuclear weapons. And the CIA said to those two guys, and there was actually a group who was working with them, Paul Wolfowitz was in charge of Plan B, Team B, this part of it. But the Committee for the Present Danger, that was Cheney and Rumsfeld, who were the Chief of Staff and the Secretary of Defense under Jerry Ford. And the CIA came right out in the open, in public, and said, the Soviet Union has no such thing. And Rumsfeld's response was, see, I told you so. The fact that the CIA can't find it is proof that it exists.
Exactly.
And when the Cold War ended, oddly enough, people went back and said, okay, where are those weapons that Rumsfeld said back in the 70s were there? Because that was when we essentially stopped going along with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, because Rumsfeld and Cheney and Wolfowitz were telling us that the Soviets weren't going along with it. And here we are, right?
So if you got the nuclear weapon states not living up to the non-proliferation treaty,
right,
why would we expect the others to live up to it?
Yeah,
it makes no sense.
No, you're right, and it is hypocrisy elevated to the level of an art form, tragically, and you're spot on right. And thank you for the call and for bringing the topic up and giving me an opportunity to rant about it. I appreciate that. Jack in Los Angeles. Hey, Jack, what's on your mind?
How you doing, Tom? Hey, listen, I heard read a story about Zbigniew Brzezinski was just in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and he made some specific statements that I can paraphrase, something about what's going to happen here is there's going to be a bunch of Americans killed either here or in Iraq.
Right, there'll be a provocation. This was a month or so ago that he said this, as I recall.
He intimated that what they're going to do is they're going to war in Iran, and they're going to do it on a false premise. And I think that's really something that should be. I haven't even seen anything about it in the news.
Here's the actual quote. This is Brzezinski. He's testifying before the Senate. This was in March of 2003. Oh, no, it was not in March of 2003. That's when he first. This was Thursday. This is a news story dated the 2nd of February. So it was whatever the Thursday was prior to the 2nd of February. And he said in his testimony, quote, to argue that America is already at war in the region with a wider Islamic threat of which Iran is the epicenter is to promote a self-fulfilling prophecy. He talked about a plausible, I'm quoting, these are his words, a plausible scenario for a military collision with Iran. He said Iraqi failure to meet the benchmarks. He said this is going to involve Iraqi failure to meet the benchmarks, followed by accusations of Iranian responsibility for the failure, And then by, and I'm still quoting Zbigniew Brzezinski, the national security advisor to Jimmy Carter, then by some provocation in Iraq, or a terrorist act in the U.S. blamed on Iran, culminating in a, quote, defensive, end quote. Now, I'm still, all of this is quoting Brzezinski, but there's like quotes around the word defensive in this. U.S. military action against Iran that plunges a lonely America into a spreading and deepening quagmire, eventually ranging across Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. End of quote.
Right.
That was Brzezinski's testimony.
Okay, well, my point is this. The Senate and the House is definitely not taking these things very seriously.
Actually, I think they are.
They would be impeaching.
Well, no, I think, again, impeachment is a process that takes an enormous amount of time and effort, and you can't do it really quickly. But you've got Bernie Sanders in the Senate, and you've got Peter DeFazio in the House introducing legislation saying that no matter what happens, Bush cannot go after Iran without going to Congress first. In other words, trying to put a barrier in place here. And that's something that we all need to be contacting our members of Congress and saying, please support that legislation. Let's get that passed. That's going to be a heck of a lot easier to get passed than impeaching Bush. And even if you impeach Bush and you end up with Cheney, you'll probably have a war even faster.
Well, I think they got to be impeached as a pair.
I agree, but that's not how it happens, and that's not how it would happen. The way it
right.
would happen is you would impeach one or the other of them. The other would replace somebody as the vice president. And, who knows, it might be Rumsfeld. I mean, he's still got an office at the Pentagon. So, as much as I love the idea of impeachment, and I'm gung-ho for it, most of the politicians on this program try to calm me down about it. But nonetheless, I think that DeFazio's legislation and Sanders' legislation to say, no, you can't go into Iran without our permission is the starting point. And something that because it's tightly focused, because it's not a broad thing, and because it's not perceived as being partisan, it's not about, because the Clinton impeachment was so perceived as so partisan, I think it's the thing that we should be supporting and we should be going forward with. Jack, thanks for the call. It's a good point that you make and well said. Glenn in Carter, is it Carteret, New Jersey?
That's right.
Hey.
You got it.
Hey, Glenn.
Hey. Yeah.
A town I've not visited, but...
You are a beacon of hope in troubled, dark times, man.
Well, thank
and,
you, Glenn.
I really am honored. You got experience from the late 60s and 70s in radio, which is good because you kind of probably have a good remember of I guess, what government and people, representatives, the stuff you were talking about, like Graham earlier, a big one of those buzzer sounds from game show, with the ant, the liberal media, it's not even a word. I tried listening to 1600 here, and around 5 o'clock when the sun is setting, my signal gets all crazy because of the wigwags with all, the solar and
sure.
all that stuff. But 77, forget it. I could be under the Holland Tunnel and it's coming in.
Yeah, you're talking the conservative there. Station. Yeah, this is the result of, 15 years of conservative talk radio having a chance to establish a foothold, but we're
exactly.
on our way. We're on our way.
Is that
what you called about?
No, I just wanted to say that, how Cafferty and Scarborough catching slack from Graham real quick.
Mm-hmm.
My response, my idea is, look, it's probably because reality is coming in on them. They probably have relatives that are feeling negative effects from all these insane decisions from this administration and for the past 12, 20 years, and now it's like. They've got to kind of be a voice and speak up and represent somehow. And eventually it's going to happen probably to everybody where, you see this movement going on. You've seen the vote kind of change hands from Democrats,
yeah.
From Republicans.
No, I think it's happening, Glenn. I think things are changing. I know it. I mean, I'm right in the middle of it. It's happening. And you're right. Spot on. Thanks a lot for the call. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. The pill that will help you escape the matrix. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
Trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom
for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Ah, what a wonderful world. Hey, special thanks to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Alex Goldmark, Justin Ewan, Andrew Dunn, Julian Suckman, Lauren Kirshner, all here in front of me, right? Hey, guys, at Air America Radio, to Ben and Shelby at White Rose Society, RadioPower.org, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room. Hey to all of you, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and especially to you, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to you for listening to our program. You make it possible, and it is much appreciated. Kate in Arcata, California. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I'm calling because in reaction to the man who said he wanted his tax break.
Yeah, this is the challenge that we have is reaching, you know, kind of Joe Everyman, and he really was this guy, and saying, sorry, the Republican Party is not really about tax breaks, and the Democratic Party isn't really about raising taxes.
Definitely. What I wanted to say is that it's always been kind of abstract when I hear anyone say, and you say it a lot too, it's good, but it's been a little abstract to me that the future generations will pay for that. Until I had the thought that, well, I wondered what, in practical ways, what does that mean? And I suppose it means, and correct me if I'm wrong, that our children and grandchildren and on forward will have higher taxes and fewer benefits. Is that?
That's absolutely right.
Is that how it manifests?
That's absolutely right. I mean, you know, if right now we were to start fully paying for the cost of the money, paying the money off that Reagan borrowed, the $3 trillion that Reagan borrowed, I mean, it's a massive amount of money. And our taxes would probably double or triple. And
well, that's what, when you said that about Reagan's borrowing that money, I heard you say that a long time ago, and that's what triggered the thought. Well, I guess it means that our children and grandchildren will pay higher taxes,
right,
and have fewer benefits.
That's absolutely right. The Republicans have never given us a tax cut. What they've done is they've given us a tax deferral. And because it's a tax deferral, that is, it's being deferred to our children and grandchildren, it's also a tax increase because there's interest that has to be paid on those taxes.
Yes. And
so,
if you could say that along with what you say and put it in a more practical way, I think that it will affect more people.
I'll keep on it, Kate.
Excellent.
I will keep on it. I'll keep coming back to it. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank
Great
you.
To hear
bye
from
bye.
You. Martha, thank you. Martha in Somerville, South Carolina. Hey, Martha.
Yes, thank you. Just following up on that, you know, John Spratt is our congressman. He's head of budgeting, and he's very much a hawk when it comes to being a fiscal conservative, a real one.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she's right. I mean, what it is, the best way to express it, it's like we're living off our credit card.
Exactly.
And it's going to be our children and grandchildren that are going to be paying that credit card.
Yep.
But the very rich have gotten some substantial tax cuts, and I think if you look at some of these, I think it was Krugman or some of these people that have really analyzed it, it's the middle class that's paying the taxes. It's not the upper class.
Yeah.
The lower classes, you know, they're paying higher sales taxes. So that's the problem. But actually, what I called you about was also about what you said about that young man, because what I found here is that because they really don't cover the real news, you know, like the local the candidates running for president have been coming into South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read the news, I would go and see the speeches, and then I look at the news, and it's like nothing is reported or just some stupid thing like this Obama-Hillary thing. And when you talk to young women, and I'll kind of try to encourage them to pay attention and vote, they're like, well, I really don't vote because I really don't understand the issues, and I really don't know who to vote for, and so I don't vote.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, which brings us back to, you know, Thomas Jefferson's point that you must have an educated citizenry in order to have an effective democracy. And you know, it's not just our schools, it's our media as well. Both of them have been under assault. Our schools have been under overt assault for the better part of 30 years, 26 years since Reagan, I guess it is. And our media is under a different kind of assault in that the failure to enforce the Sherman Act and the companies that have nothing to do with media getting into it, and not to mention, and then there's the probably, frankly, the even larger assault on our media has been coming from folks like, you know, the Media Research Center, who are trying to play the refs. You know, they're trying to do the Lee Atwater thing and say, oh, it's all liberal media and all that kind of thing. And it's tragic. Martha, thank you for the call and for a point you make. Good point. Janet in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Janet.
Hi.
thanks for having me on. But
sure.
I was just wondering, where do they think that the, quote, liberal media comes from? I mean, do they feel that all of the liberals go to college, take the same journalism classes, and get the same science?
I think so. What they know to be true, if I may interrupt you, what they know to be true is that people who go to college, people who are college educated, are more inclined to be liberal or progressive. That's true.
Right.
And so they say, you know, these people, these journalism guys, they went to college, so they must be liberals.
Right. Do they become liberal after they get onto the real world and see what's going on?
Exactly. That's my point. See, America is a liberal country. We were founded, you know, the foundations of American democracy are liberal. The ideas of the Enlightenment are liberal. George Washington called himself a liberal. So when you say, hey, you know, somebody goes to college and they're more inclined to become a liberal, yeah, surprise, surprise, they figure out how the world works.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. Or maybe, like I said, maybe when they get out into this, you know, they get into the situations in the journalism class, maybe they were conservatives to begin with, but they get into the real world, see what's going on, and all of a sudden they say, hey, this is not the way it's going.
Yeah, you know? go down and visit New Orleans as you're doing some of your reporting, or go out and look at the consequences of 26 years of conservative economic policies in the ravaged cities of America, these insane trade policies. That, you know, walk through the cities of Flint, Michigan, you know, after GM shut down their factories and moved them to Mexico. Yeah, absolutely, Janet. Well said. Uh-huh. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. We have to wrap up the show here. Have a great weekend. Coming up on Monday's program here on the Tom Hartman Radio program, I'll be challenging conservative Alex Epstein, who says there's an un-American opposition to income inequality. Lieutenant Colonel Colby C. Vokey of the U.S. Marine Corps is here about his client, Omar Khadr. When Omar was 15, he was in prolonged solitary confinement, subjected to unending interrogation, severe mistreatment, and even torture. Where? Guantanamo Bay. Is this legal or morally right? That and your calls here on the Tom Hartman program. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.